The Compliance Perspectives podcast is sponsored by Protiviti, a global consulting firm serving the healthcare industry. Learn more at Protiviti.com. Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives podcast. I'm Adam Turtletop from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Rob DeConte. Rob is Assistant Inspector General for Legal Affairs within the Office of Counsel to the Inspector General at HHS. Rob, first, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Adam.
Oh, our pleasure. So the folks in healthcare know how they have adjusted and how they've worked during the COVID pandemic. I'm curious, how has the OIG responded in terms of its own internal operations and activities?
Yeah, well, the public health emergency has had a huge impact on those internal operations and activities. And I can give you a perspective from our Office of Counsel to the Inspector General, where I work with our chief counsel, Greg Demske, and my peer, Lisa Ray, who is another assistant IG for legal affairs. And, you know, it's had a huge impact on our leadership of the office and I would say also on OIG's mission. So, you know, in addition to the tragedy of all the lost lives and the massive disruption, we've had a lot of opportunities to reassess a lot of things in our personal and professional lives. And it's had a huge impact on OIG's operations. So, you know, early on in the public health emergency, we paused some of our actions at the option of providers. So things like corporate integrity agreement deadlines, self-disclosures. We used our discretion when we were taking certain investigative steps, you know, whether it was interviews or subpoenas in our administrative cases, basically trying to minimize the impact on those that were delivering patient care in the midst of the pandemic. And then we had a huge, you know, and very sudden transition to remote work in our office. So this was a big transition for many of us to working remotely with all the difficulties and some positives that came along with that. We've had many of the same challenges that I suspect your members have faced and the organizations have faced, keeping everyone engaged and connected in a virtual or a hybrid environment. And so we've had, you know, certainly within the Office of Counsel, we've had more frequent staff meetings. We've been almost all remote. You know, we've integrated new business units into our office. We took on the exclusions function in the Office of Counsel, which I know many of your members are familiar with, that used to be within the Office of Investigations. We've had the challenge of hiring staff, some of whom we hadn't met in person. And then figuring out what our office is going to look like post-pandemic. So that's a lot of on our internal operations. You know, on the substance of our work, you know, there's also a lot we could talk about on the substance, but those are some things on sort of the process in our office and internal operations.
Well, it certainly just sounds like you've gone through a lot of the same changes that the healthcare provider world has gone through too. Now, let's talk about some of those other issues that you mentioned. COVID changed a lot from how we work to new programs like telehealth becoming a normal part of healthcare. How has it changed the OIG's focus? What are you concentrating on these days?
Well, you know, picking up on the theme of change and the public health emergency as an opportunity to reflect and make changes, you know, we did issue a special fraud alert in November of 2020 on speaker programs. And because the public health emergency had, you know, sort of necessarily curtailed many in-person activities, we thought it was a good opportunity to reflect on what would things look like, you know, post-COVID. And, you know, what were some of the suspect characteristics that we've seen about speaker programs over the years? And what really, you know, needs to be provided in person versus what can be provided virtually? And so that special fraud alert, that was a that was an important, you know, product that we put out, listing some features that we think are, you know, suspect we've seen on speaker programs over the years. You know, where there's little to no substantive information actually presented. Alcohol is available or a meal that's more than just a modest value is provided. maybe where the alcohol is free, you know, whether it's held at a location that's not really conducive to education, like a restaurant or an entertainment or sports venue, and a bunch of other, you know, suspect characteristics that people can read. But that's an example of us reflecting on, you know, what's really necessary to happen in person and what can be done virtually. You mentioned telehealth. You know, telehealth, you know, it offers the promise to provide care in different circumstances. It provides potential access, certainly during the public health emergency, without the patient being exposed to the risk of the virus. But we've also seen, you know, a lot of telefraud, what we call telefraud schemes, where the fraudsters are trying to capitalize on the uncertainty related to the pandemic to steal patients' information through cold calls on social media, and then bill for things that didn't happen. Nursing homes, you know, we've seen tremendous, you know, challenges for nursing homes, and certainly a loss of life during the pandemic that occurred in nursing homes. And a lot of our oversight, OIG's oversight through our Office of Evaluations and Inspections, Audit Services, has been focused on patients receiving care in nursing homes. And then, you know, new programs. You think about the provider relief funds. So we've had some actual grant fraud cases, including some under our civil money penalties law, addressing provider relief fund fraud. So a lot of, you know, a lot of impact on the substance of our work.
I can imagine. And you certainly point out to some areas like telehealth and speaker programs where you're seeing problems. Are there other areas as well? And here I'm not asking about the out and out fraudsters running completely fake scams with no provisions of healthcare, but where are you seeing problems with organizations that are truly in the business of providing real healthcare and with real compliance programs, nonetheless getting into big problems, either because they're doing something wrong structurally or, you know, bad actors internally are taking advantage of the changes?
Yeah, no, and I understand, Adam, that you're not asking about the criminal fraud schemes. You know, our mm-hmm. Office of Investigations is very actively engaged on those matters, in addition to the civil ones. But I think, you know, post-COVID, we'll see some of the same problems we saw before the pandemic, where, you know, the business pressure to achieve a particular financial result maybe overwhelms the compliance imperative to do the right thing, particularly where there's an impact on patients. So, you know, for example, we've worked on nursing home failure of care cases over the years where the problems stemmed from low staffing levels. And yet you've probably seen the same news articles that I've seen, you know, recently about private equity purchasing some of these homes, making business decisions that affect the staffing levels. And I think, you know, where staffing is an issue, we may see additional, you know, failure of care cases. In the area of financial assistance to patients, you know, the government has collected now more than $1 billion in civil settlements under the federal anti-kickback statute for payments that were made by pharmaceutical manufacturers routed through purportedly independent charities that the government alleged were not, in fact, independent. And, you know, that's one category of kickback arrangements where we're concerned about, you know, and if you look at the government's recoveries overall, kickbacks are still a major area of enforcement focus, where we're concerned about the corrupting influence of money seeping into decisions about, you know, who gets what care. So I think all those areas, you know, nursing homes, kickback cases, are going to be likely going to be a focus in the coming years.
Now, with all these changes going on and these new focus areas as well, you know, obviously compliance people are going to be looking for guidance out there. What's the OIG's office doing to improve its publicly available resources to give the healthcare community guidance to, you know, avoid these kinds of things?
Yeah, good question. Well, as Christy Grimm recently announced, I think it was in September 22nd, we published a request for information on OIG's modernization initiative to improve our publicly available resources on our website and in the Federal Register. And you might ask, why would we be issuing an RFI now? Well, there's a couple of reasons. You know, over the past two decades, there's been a proliferation of the various mediums and technologies used to spread and consume information. And we think that we could really modernize the format of some of our guidance and resources to improve the usability, for folks in the industry. One idea to modernize this guidance, and this is only an example, would be to change the compliance program guidance documents, which currently are static documents that are published in the Federal Register and target a specific industry subsector, into some other product dedicated to a specific industry sector that would be updated as we identify best compliance practices and additional risk areas through our audits, evaluations, and investigations. And, over the same time period, we've seen the increasing complexity of financial relationships within the healthcare industry that may implicate our enforcement authorities. So, and you think 25 years have passed since Congress mandated that we issue advisory opinions under the federal anti-kickback statute. And we've noticed a trend there that the advisory opinion requests have sometimes become more complicated. So the goal of this RFI is really to solicit feedback from the compliance community about what are the best vehicles for and what's the best format and content of guidance that we can issue to really ensure that we're providing the most meaningful and timely and useful guidance to the healthcare community, including your members. So, if folks take nothing else away from this this podcast, I would really urge you to consider sending in, a comment in response to this RFI, because we're going to use this feedback to identify ways that we can modernize. And, I think there's a lot of potential in this area. So if folks are interested, please check out that RFI. It's on our website, and it was issued on September 22nd.
Thanks. And I know the community has always appreciated the fact that, your office has been so willing to take the time to engage and listen and really interact with the community. Now, finally, one last question. Where should compliance teams focus in terms of some of the recent guidance during the pandemic from the OIG?
Well, a major focus for us has been providing guidance to the healthcare community about our enforcement authorities and how they're being applied to arrangements that are directly connected to the public health emergency. And we actually created a whole separate section of our website with information that we've updated pretty frequently about COVID-19 fraud activities. We've issued enforcement policy statements outlining flexibilities for providers during the public health emergency. We created a new product, a frequently asked questions product, to consider inquiries about the application of OIG authorities. And as I mentioned earlier, to the extent possible, we've been trying to minimize the burden on providers where we could be and be flexible where we can with respect to our enforcement authorities, while at the same time vigorously pursuing the cases that need to be pursued. So if you go to the website, you'll see that the guidance that we've issued has essentially tracked, the issues that evolved over the course of the pandemic. So, our first policy statement was about providers that reduce or waive amounts owed by patients for telehealth services. And that complemented some of the other flexibilities that were put forth by HHS to make sure that patients could get the care they need without the risk of being exposed to the virus by physically going to a location. We had another policy statement on that complemented or built upon the blanket waivers of the Stark Law that the Secretary issued in March of 2020. And it basically said that we would exercise our discretion, enforcement discretion, not to impose administrative sanctions for remuneration related to the blanket waivers. And then as of today, we've provided answers to 19 frequently asked questions. And those FAQs cover topics like, entities providing items and services at a reduced rate to assist skilled nursing facilities that are battling the disease, free in-kind transportation for oncology patients to and from the patient's home to maybe an alternate practice site if the first one was not available. Cell phone donations for mental health and substance use disorder providers, clinical labs, helping with, retail pharmacies do test collection. So it's really quite a few. And, the most recent one was from May of this year, and it related to incentives and rewards offered to encourage vaccinations. And so we didn't really commit to making every question that we received a frequently asked question. But, you know, overall, we've been committed to getting out the guidance that people need, you know, during the public health emergency and hopefully after it ends. So I'd encourage folks to check out our website on that COVID-19 section.
Thanks. And thanks for, you know, providing this additional guidance via this podcast today. I'm sure it's going to be very helpful to everyone. So, Rob, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.